This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Sandy Kearney, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 82, Better Than Fridge Magnets.
Hello, this is Michael Martin coming to you live for yet another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. And today I am coming to you from the darkened hotel room that I'm sitting in here in Hong Kong, of all places. Thrilled, I tell you, to be part of today's podcast because we're going to have an awful lot of fun with all kinds of old friends coming back together for a great show. So let me kick it over to Michael, and we'll kick it then to our special friend who's here too, Michael.
Thank you, Michael. And it's a beautiful pollen-filled day in Durham, North Carolina here. So what is that, half a globe away from you? And really, really just excited. We have a special guest, longtime friend and co-conspirator in virtual worlds and gaming and everything else, Ian Hughes. Welcome.
Hello. Yay. Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
Yes, very, very glad.
I'm sat here in sunny Basingstoke in merry old England, where it's absolutely chucking it down with rain again.
Excellent. I hate to say this, but every time I hear Basingstoke, and you know, Gilbert and Sullivan ruined that town's name for me. My all-time favorite Gilbert and Sullivan show is, why am I going blank on the name? Ruddy Gore. And there's this whole joke about Basingstoke.
Oh, that would be, wouldn't it? Yes, it is a place of some ridicule, but it's where we live.
Yes, so and it's a great place to be.
I've got a nice view anyway, out into the park.
I was following your, I can't remember if it was on Twitter or somewhere else on your blog, the discussion of Basingstoke.
Ah, yes.
And the different perspectives. And I just got a big smile on my face as I was reading it. Well, Ian, you have been up to a lot of really cool, fun stuff lately. I thought it was quite appropriate because it kind of matched up with what we're doing on the show and some of the topics we've been talking about lately also around augmented reality. And obviously with our main show topic of games at work and game development and how games are cool and fun. You've been doing some game development. What's going on with that?
Yay. I seem to have been doing a lot of variations on the same thing. So one particular project has spun off into lots of different directions. But primarily, it started as the Imperial College Hospital Simulator. Or this major incident simulator, as it turned out to be. And so that the whole point of that was to train hospital staff, medical staff, and let them practice having a mass influx of patients into a hospital and then having to communicate with one another and shuffle these patients around. So it's kind of like air traffic control. But at the moment, they train in this country anyway with fridge magnets, which are great.
So they don't talk back as much.
They don't talk back as much, but it's kind of like playing Dungeons and Dragons, really, isn't it? So they, you have a moderator, and they discuss it. So a lot of it is really about people talking to one another and knowing one another's jobs and pressures and roles. But obviously, you have to all be there at the same time around those fridge magnets. So we started it's a research project, really. But the aim was to be better than fridge magnets. So obviously, a virtual world solution was a good idea, and the initial one we did was in was obviously in Second Life because that was the easiest place to quickly prototype something. So we actually built it and worked in that environment, and then moved it across. And I started building it with Unity.
Very cool.
So Unity is obviously a great tool because you can build whatever you want. And Unity's got this kind of partner application that called Photon, which was a really good server that helps move the messages backwards and forwards, kind of a messaging thing. And it's kind of grown from there. So there's a lot of code to put in Unity. So you write proper code, but it also needs obviously a lot of love and attention from graphic design as well. So luckily I've been able to work with some really good designers, and that come through Imperial College. And so we've ended up with we've got a hospital that's kind of fully functioning and scenario driven, and we've shown it to all sorts of people, and it's kind of spun off other projects. We've done a specific simulator on dealing with a trauma case. So rather than doing the whole hospital, it's kind of narrowed down on what's effectively a virtual patient, which is a guy with a very nasty broken leg. It's horrible. And he just screams all the time. I keep having to put everything on mute. And then some of this is then spun off into another one, which is the one we're doing at the moment, which I can't say too much about other than it's in Arabic.
Very cool. I was watching. That was another thing I saw, the thread on right to left versus left to right text rendering and the code that you were writing around that.
Yes, it's. I was filled with dread when I got a right to left project, because way back in the day when IBM had OS 2, and then OS 2 Warp, and then there was OS 2 Warp J, the Japanese version, and I remember us having a computer switched to Japanese in the corner that we had to test our stuff on. But of course, you can't read anything. We're not kind of trained to read those languages. And so even if something's in the same place on a menu, you can't remember what it said. So you keep having to have a machine side by side to see if it behaves itself. But obviously with right to left, it's not just symbols. It's everything changes. Everything's round a different way for a start, but as you type, things try and do, or some of the helper applications kind of try. They don't just turn the characters round. It's not just doing ABC and making it CDA or CBA, whichever way round that is. There's some stuff that goes on with it kind of joining letters up and kind of putting quotes in. So it's a very strange environment, and of course you kind of have to be careful that you're not reversing things twice, because otherwise it doesn't make sense to anyone. So you need those sort of things where you can say, well, I'm going to switch my keyboard to Arabic and I'm going to type a keystroke, and hopefully it will come out in the pattern that I can recognize. And that's where, as I put in my blog post, Rob Smart, our colleague, or my former colleague, your current colleague, he just said, type WFHP space HGODN, and then that apparently, he sent me the string that looks like in Arabic, or in a particular dialect of Arabic, so I can now pattern match.
Very cool.
And I can see all my users are called good morning, because that's what that is. all my button labels say good morning. All the chat comes out initially saying good morning. So it's a very, very friendly environment.
Wasn't there a Beatles song that went something like, good morning, good morning, good morning, yeah. You're walking around and everybody's yelling good morning at you. Maybe you could get the patient with a broken leg to yell good morning, and it would just be in total ambiance.
Yes, that would certainly do it, yes. I've sat on a train doing the broken leg project a little bit sometimes. The broken leg one wasn't networked, and I'd forgot that I had the thing on. And so just to hear this, like, oh, everybody looking around, what's he doing? It's kind of the same problem. You have all sorts of problems if you sit there and play with Arduino stuff on a train, so you've got like bits of wire and stuff like that, and people think you're wiring something nefarious up. So if you combine the two, you have an Arduino
with screaming and wires
person. yeah so it's all very odd.
Not the green wire
Of course this kind of Arabic instantiation of what we're doing is not a hospital. It's a completely different thing. So it's more kind of kids interacting with one another. This one's for, but it's not just writing it Unity and making it cope with Arabic. It's doing all the web front end stuff, because you've got admin things like user IDs, and you've got things that they do that need to be logged and recorded. And it's there's a lot of it.
Wow.
which is why I wrote that pattern. I mean, I was kind of trying to do a brain dump of how it all worked without saying how it all worked, but the thing, especially when we're trying to, you know, we're all spending a lot of time trying to help kids learn to code and stuff like that, and you look at how we used to learn to code, which was go and sit and do PL1 for a couple of years, you're in one language, one environment, doing one set of stuff. But now you have to be able to do little bits of everything across every single platform for it to make sense. You can't, it's not practical to say, well, you only do PHP or you only do Unity or you only do kind of HTML layouts or you only do database stuff. Everyone has to be able to do everything. But then the tools are there to help you do it. So it's not easy, but it's fun. But I don't know how anyone would start doing it. That's the bit that scares me.
I was trying to think, you know, you started with PL1, I started with Basic and then Pascal and then C, you know.
I didn't learn at college.
Yeah, I think COBOL and Fortran in college too, right? Yeah. But it was all these different languages, but the whole concept was to understand the basics of programming, right? And how to think like a programmer. And now even that is a little bit more difficult because not only you have these different platforms and each of them have a different programming model, on top of the fact that they're in different languages with different UIs and different types of messaging, et cetera. So, wow, yeah. You're right. How do you get started?
and the bit that still gets me, particularly doing the Unity stuff, because most of the things are networked things. And so Unity is really good at being a kind of loose peer-to-peer thing going on, but you need something in charge. So I don't actually have a server. I have a thing to pass messages back and forth. That's what Photon does. But if it's the same code that that kind of creates your player, but then the same piece of application running on somebody else's has to ghost you as a player, but create their own. So that so you have lots of RPC calls and lots of bits in there and lots of messaging floating around, but sometimes you just have to stop and think, hang on, who's talking to who? Because you're writing kind of, back in the olden days, we wrote client-server code. You knew you were on the client and you knew you were on the server, but now it's all mashed into one.
The client is the server, which is the client.
Yes. And sometimes the client has to act as a server, but send stuff to itself as if it's a client. So there are a number of times where it's like, hang on, how did this work again? I know I only just put that bit of code in, but did it work?
And I thought recursion was tough in Pascal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and the other thing.
The famous Towers of Hanoi problem, right?
Yes. And in the, I've had a bit of a testing trauma as well with the hospital one, because the hospital needed a telephone system. Or the requirement was to have a telephone system, because we got voice. We had kind of, I put channeled voice in. So if you were on the A&E channel, you just heard A&E people. That was kind of made sense. But they wanted it to be a bit more like it is in the hospital, that if you need to talk to somebody, you have to ring them. And if they're engaged, you can't talk to them, all that sort of stuff. But the telephone systems always seem simple, but they're not. And even down to things like what sound to use, or how to find the sound. So if I ring you, your ringtone goes off, doesn't it? And we call it a ringtone. If I'm dialing you, I get a dial tone, but I don't know what it's called when I've dialed you and you haven't answered yet. There's a noise there that I hear that's kind of system generated.
Yeah, it's not the ringtone, it's the ring signal.
Yeah. But if you try and Google for one of them to try and find an open source free Creative Commons one of those, it's quite tricky. So it's like, oh, I don't even know what the sounds are called. How am I going to build this?
Yeah, and I can imagine if you like made a phone call and hooked your phone up to a device that allowed you to record that outgoing sound, that sound itself may be copyrighted by Absolutely. British Telephone.
Absolutely. And I mean, there are things like Asterix and stuff like that, the kind of the open source phone systems that have all those sounds in, but it was like one of those tiny little stopping moments of, hang on, this is so complicated, I don't even know what the sound's called. And then when you go and test it, you try and build a multi-user system that's using voice, where you're trying to make sure you can call somebody, make sure that if they're engaged, the other person can't call them, that if they hang up, that it opens the thing. You kind of need five or six hands and five or six machines to do it.
So were you building this, Ian, within the game so that multiplayers can phone one another within the game?
Yes.
So you were essentially building a full-on telephony system.
Yes.
Crash.
Yes.
And you're not done yet? I mean, you had all week.
I know. The phone took a long while. And also, we've got there's a note-taking thing that it needs as well. So when they're writing notes about the patients. And that's turned into Google Docs, really.
Yeah.
Rewriting Google Docs. Because they need to be able to see and edit it at the same time. Because you'd be standing around a board kind of writing and scrolling things, maybe with one another. And so it's one of those environments that's ended up encapsulating everything.
Wow.
So and you decided not to use like Minecraft and like one of those signs or something and just
kind of... that was what I had originally, that sort of principle. but then it was, well, I can't see whether they're typing or not. And so these are collaborative environments and it becomes easy for a requirement to creep in that potentially is a bit ludicrous.
Yeah, I mean, just think how many times, you know, gosh, 8 years ago, right? We would go, oh, we'll just throw up a prim there, and what you type, I'll show up there.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's simple. But writing that,
yes,
so that you can see that I'm typing while you're
absolutely, and that's what I've done.
Wow. So
time after doing Google and what British Telecom have done, how else do you entertain yourself? Have you considered doing a television network, perhaps?
Oh, well, no. I thought I'd just stick with the shows rather than doing the entire network. it's been, I don't know, it's just odd. I spend quite a bit of time, as we were talking about earlier, but I spent quite a bit of time doing a martial art called Choi Kwang Do. And I'm an assistant instructor with that now. And we had a big road trip to Atlanta, where the HQ is, a couple of weeks ago. And that was fun. And that was my most disconnected, didn't take any tech. Well, I did take some tech with me, but I didn't do any specific tech.
generic tech.
Yeah. And so
how much tech did you bring with you? Come on. You know,
well, there was devices. All right, there was,
so, did you have more than two chargers?
Yeah, there was quite a lot. I did take it into the Dojang very often.
Very often. Sometimes.
Because with that's one thing where, and I really wish Microsoft had given me a proper development kit for the Kinect 2, but they haven't done that yet. Or at least let me near one. With the Kinect 1, I was looking at how we capture our body movements in choice and map it against the proper technique, because it's all about leveraging what your body can do.
Right.
And there's a sequential flow to how you throw a punch, how you block, and how you do a kick, that so you don't damage yourself, and so that you get the maximum power. And you know, we do lots of that. Some people do video analysis and stuff like that, but the Kinect can see you and see you there in 3D and map you to a skeleton. So I'm quite and the martial art, and Choi is quite a forward thinking modern martial art, so it doesn't frown upon such things. It's a good thing to have a little bit of tech support to do stuff.
So this is wonderful, Ian. Instead of Dance Dance Revolution, you could just do Choi Choi, you know, and have your Kinect ensure that
you're doing the right moves.
Yeah. Well, and so you have, you know, we mentioned AR, you have all the flavors of AR potentially in there, and blended reality as well, where there's you performing a movement at a magic mirror, if you like. And so the magic mirror is showing you red and green as you line up and do the things right. But you've then got the ability for somebody else to be in an environment with you doing it, so that their digital representation, it's not necessarily a pre-canned one, it's a live performance. So they can perform with you.
So you can do sparring without actually worrying about accidentally hitting the person and breaking their jaw.
Well, potentially we could do. I mean, in Choi we tend not to hit one another anyway. We do defense drills, since we do get in close and hit shields. But yes, we could do those defense drills with. So you could practice your blocking against something that was or wasn't there. And so that's aside from also capturing kind of Grandmaster Choi, who's invented this. He's He's the ultimate practitioner of it. And if the machines were quick enough, we'd be able to capture what he does. He's to be able to get him, he's the reference model for the art. And it would be fantastic for him to be a digital reference model for the art. Rather, we've got DVDs and stuff, but it just seems it's the time to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Capture it now, so 100 years from now, people who are still doing Choi have the reference model.
Absolutely.
Well, but it's still tricky. I mean, there's lots of attempts to capture martial art in video and in description and in secret scrolls and various things, but I would hesitate to say that even the most sophisticated three-dimensional, round the body mocap kind of solutions would still do justice to what you're learning.
Yes.
It would be a better substitute than nothing.
Well, it's the difference between reading a book about doing something and actually doing it.
Yeah. And I think you're right. It's that at the moment, if it depends which level of practice you're going to, but if you're doing the kind of learning the motion slowly so that you've got which is what we do, you start slow and you get the speed up. Just the mere kind of slow motion fact of blocking something and how you lean back and how you transfer your weight, we do it ultra slow speed. So right. Anything can cope with picking that up. Now, most of the tech at the moment can't cope with when everyone goes flat out.
Right.
And particularly when Grandmaster Choi goes flat out, even when they video it, I think he has to slow down because it's just too quick. Mm-hmm. But it'll catch up, won't it? And it's not to, none of this, as with all these tech things, none of it's to replace the proper thing. And it's to augment it and it's to add to it and to give you a bit of insight and not be the only training aid, because going to a class and hanging out with people and doing stuff and feeling the vibe of everyone kind of shouting and enjoying it, that's very, very important. But there are times of self-reflection that you need the tech sat there and off you go, sort of doing it.
How very cool. Well, in last week when we were walking through our 3D printing kind of stuff, naturally our thoughts turned to you, as
absolutely.
They always do. And we were very, very excited to share, some of the interesting things that I saw when I was in Hanover at the industrial fair that was going on there. Michael, as you know, has been really kicking around with the MakerBot and some of the interesting things he's been into as well. What's new in your world from a 3D printing perspective?
Well, I think we're still, a friend is busy trying to get an electric motorbike, motorbike, kind of off the ground. It's quite a revolutionary design he's come up with. He used to run a superbike team. And we've often ended up having conversations about how much of that we can engineer and make replicable in a kind of 3D printing environment. Mm-hmm. Obviously not the batteries and the motor and stuff, but there's a lot of other stuff. And a little while ago, we were trying to remake a housing for something based on one that we kind of had rough drawings of, but between us, neither of our kind of 3D design skills were accurate enough to do it.
Yeah, I saw a guy. I think I tweeted this one out. I don't know if you saw it. With the guy who's printed an entire kayak.
Yeah,
that one was kind of cool. I mean, it was, yes, he did 60, 70 pieces, then manually bolted it together and put all kinds of other stuff on it. But then there was another one that I saw that was printing out a body for was an Aston Martin.
Yeah,
like yeah. Oh, yeah.
$6,000 instead of the $200,000+ or something.
Yeah. I know. I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? that we should be doing. And I really like the fact I can just go wandering to Staples to go and buy some printer ink, and the first thing I see is a 3D printer in the doorway.
It's
a commercial, simple thing to just pick up and take home.
And Radio Shack in the States is starting to sell 3D printing filament.
Yep.
Not in the stores yet, though, because I really need some. I'm building some little giveaways for the people that are going to be manning the pedestal at the show that I'm organizing coming up in a few weeks. I found these maxi figs, I call them, that are like little race car guys. And so I've been building out helmets and face masks for the helmet, and I'm running out of filament. It's going to be very, very expensive figs here, let me tell you. Because they're like 4.5 inches tall.
Excellent. You're taking over what Makey's are doing, aren't you?
Yeah, good stuff, Well, I know we are just about out of time, and we have so much we want to talk about. I hope we can invite you back again soon.
Of course you can. I might even accept
it. That would be even better. where can people follow what you're doing and see all the cool things going on, Ian?
Well, I'm ePredator everywhere, so ePredator on Twitter. And feedingedge.co.uk is me and my company, which is me. So there's lots of links there, links to the stuff I did on telly. And there's also a link to a magazine that I regularly write for, an online magazine called Flush, Flush the Fashion, which is a kind of science, tech, arts, everything magazine. And it's a glossy magazine, but published solely online. And I just wrote a really weird article about surveillance and NSA type things. So I'll probably never get into America ever again.
sounds really, really exciting.
Well, I love your pictures of Bob, by the way, because I've beaten up on Bob myself in my dojo back in the US too.
Excellent. Yes. Bob was a prerequisite of, or a post-requisite of moving.
So I have to ask, there's a phrase I heard, and I can't remember what British TV show it was. Bob's your uncle?
Yes. Yes, there's a whole extra bit to that phrase that's not broadcastable.
Okay. I didn't know that part.
but Bob's your uncle is a quaint phrase.
Yes.
it just generally means, yeah, you've sorted that out.
Okay. So you've beaten up Bob there.
I have beaten up, but not my uncle.
And once I get to a place where I can have easy access to YouTube again, which should be tomorrow when I get to Singapore, I'll be able to watch the Scottish rendition of talking to an elevator that uses voice recognition for an individual who wants to go to floor 11.
Oh no!
like the Ozzy Osbourne and his car back in the Osbourne days.
I suppose so. I am told that it is absolutely side-splitting hilarious. I will drop the link in the show notes, and for those of you in other places of the world, you should have easy access to it.
Excellent. Well,
thank you, everybody, for listening this week. Don't forget to follow us in all the usual places, and we look forward to your feedback over at gamesatwork.biz. Thanks, Ian.
Thank you. See ya.
Bye. You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.